Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts every week from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of Lending Forward. My name is Sarah Rogers. I will be your host today. And I am so excited to welcome back to the show, Phil. I'm declaring you an official friend of Lending Forward. We have Phil Treadwell joining us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, I'm excited to be here again. Thank you for having me. This is always a great show to be on, great podcast. You guys are giving a ton to the industry, and any other fellow podcasters that are adding value to the industry, I'm definitely friends with.
Awesome. Love that. Well, a little bit about you. I have a little sheet to go down of some accolades and such, just to give our listeners a background. Phil is the founder of M1 Academy, which was named a top 10 mortgage coaching program in 2023. He's the host of Mortgage Marketing Expert podcast. He has great conversations over there all the time. We might have maybe a few crossover listeners between here and there. I know I'm one of them. He's a national speaker and author, the recipient of many accolades. A few of them are 40 Most Influential Mortgage Professionals Under 40 in 2019, Most Connected Mortgage Professionals in 2021 and 22 by NMP Magazine, a Top 20 Mortgage Professional in 2020 by Yahoo Finance, and a Top 10 Founder You Should Follow in 2024 by USA Today. So that's quite the bio, an impressive bio. But now that I have told everyone who you are, I want you to take the reins for a second. Tell our listeners a little bit about you, just in case they aren't familiar with your background.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate those accolades. I'm honored to have received some of those and really just had the opportunity to connect with and collaborate with so many incredible people in our mortgage industry. And that's really who I am, is I'm a mortgage professional. I've been in the business a little over 20 years, going on 21 years. I was an originator, branch manager, area manager, regional, national director, all the things in between. As you said, I was a podcaster. At the time in 2018, when I launched my podcast, Mortgage Marketing Expert, the whole purpose was to take some of that content and put it out in quote picks, or, you know, do some social media content before content repurposing was really a thing. And we had incredible guests that had incredible value. It was nothing that me or my team did. We just had some good content that people wanted to hear, and that opened up the door to a lot of opportunities. I'm very passionate about this industry because not only the core of the industry do we put people into homes and help them achieve the dream of homeownership, but I'm also very passionate about this industry and moving it forward to a more modern, relevant era. That's why I love your guys' podcast, Lending Forward. You guys aren't just talking about what's happening in the mortgage industry, but how do we move these conceptually forward? Our lives have changed a ton, especially over the last 4 or 5 years since COVID, but our industry is very different than it was, you know, even before then. And I think that it's important for all of us to stay relevant so that we're attracting the right consumers and partners, that we're attracting the right people within our respective companies and teams so that we can set out for each of the objectives and missions that we have for our business. So at the core, that's who I am. I'm a mortgage guy. I obviously coach and speak and consult and do things like that. I don't work for a specific mortgage company anymore, haven't for a couple of years, but I'm still very passionate about coming alongside people that are wanting to do the right thing by people and move the industry forward.
Love that. Love that. I think that can relate to a lot of people, a lot of our listeners. So I want to dive into our topic. You recently spoke at a town hall for Atlantic Bay where you covered many things that everyone in our industry needs to hear, but the overall theme was what the uncommon have in common, which that's not just a random topic. I think you have a book coming out with the same title. So tell us a little bit about that. Where and when can we find it?
Yeah. So the title of the book is What the Uncommon Have in Common. And really the theme is uncommon people, elite professionals, top performers, both in and out of our industry. They have habits and tactics and mindset that they're all in common. All kinds of businesses structured differently, you know, different missions, visions, and values. But top performers and elite professionals, I've noticed, have things in common. This is, you know, podcast guests that I've had, people that I've coached, things that I've applied in my life, people that I've had the opportunity to meet and study. There's a lot of things that these success principles can be applied to everyone. And so we try to identify some of those, some of the ones that may not necessarily rise to the surface and be quite as obvious to us at times. And so the book, we're going to try to get it out by the end of Q1. We are doing some pre-sale where people get a little bit cheaper and free shipping. It's just on my website, philtrudwell.com/book. They can go pre-order a copy if they'd like. I think it's like $20. We're not trying to, you don't make money writing a book. The whole idea is really to disseminate this information, create opportunities to talk to people. But at its core, it's how do we raise our game? How do we raise the bar? How do we become more effective and efficient? And how do we stay relevant, like I was saying earlier, to making sure that we're achieving the goals that we set for ourselves?
Awesome. Well, I'll put that in the show notes, philtrudwell.com/book. So anyone interested, I know I'll be definitely picking up a copy and everyone listening should too. But let's dive into some of those principles, maybe a little sneak peek into the book, if you will. Sure. During our town hall, you kicked it off by saying how understanding what's truly happening in the market is a hallmark of these uncommon people. So what tips do you have on ways that industry pros can seek and find this most valuable info? But most importantly, what I'm wondering is seeking that info while not getting too sucked into whatever like little micro event might be happening and maintaining focus on their long-term goals. Is there a special balance that we can strike there?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And at the end of the day, what we have to remember is there's opportunities in every single market. Our job as professionals is to articulate those opportunities to potential clients and consumers, as well as the partners that we work with. And the thing we need to remember, I know, especially as I've, you know, I have a group coaching and one-on-one coaching program, as I talk to people, they're like, you know, clients and realtors are saying, well, you know, let's see what happens after the election, right? Leading up to the election for months and then even post-election. And what I let them know is that just is, like you talked about, the micro event that's happening right now. Regardless, we were going to have a new president, regardless of who got elected. And there's no massive, meaningful change that happens very, very quickly. And I tell people, if coming out of that election, whoever's elected, if the economy is better, great. People have more money and are able to buy homes and invest in real estate. If the economy is not as good, well, that's typically favorable to mortgage interest rates. Then that allows it easier, makes it easier for people to buy homes and invest in real estate. Either way, that should be a good thing for our business. But we have people waiting on the sidelines thinking there's going to be a massive correction in home prices or massive correction in interest rates. And neither one of those two things are going to happen. And in the webinar that I did for Atlantic Bay, I share a chart a lot of times when I speak, and it talks about the number of homes that have built that were built each decade. And we've not completed the next decade, but the last one that was measured, the full 10-year time period, there was less than 6 million homes built from 2010 to 2019. But each of the six 10-year time periods that were preceding that had between 20 and 27 million new homes built. It's essentially the lowest number of homes we built since the Great Depression. And it's important to remember that whenever you also pair the fact that there's 50 million millennials, 60 million millennials, something like that in the United States, but only half of millennials out there own a home. So you've got 20, 25, 30 million people between the ages of 27 and 42 that are either attempting to or going to be attempting to enter the home buying market. So when you take that and combine it with other generations, we have one of the largest groups of potential home buyers and one of the smallest percentages of supply. Mm-hmm. That's why home prices are not going to drastically decrease. That's why there's no bubble. It's simple supply and demand. And when you talk about the interest rate side of the conversation, it's an inflation conversation. We have too many dollars chasing too few goods. And to offset that, interest rates are going to have to, not just mortgage interest rates, but interest rates in general, have to offset that return. And so what I encourage people to do is educate people that regardless of when they enter the home buying market, you can't, to use a football metaphor, you can't move the ball down the field if you're standing on the sidelines. The best time to buy a home today, the second best time was yesterday, or maybe vice versa. Yesterday was the best time and today is the second best time. But you've got to be out there participating. And so we have to alleviate those concerns and those fears that people have about what may happen. And that's really the core of being an advisor. We have so many people that call themselves mortgage advisors. Well, the root word of advisor is advice. Well, to give people advice, we need to be having conversations. And so we need to understand, why do people want to buy a home? What's the core reason? Is it they need more room because they're building, they're expanding their family and they need a bigger place to live? They're moving across the country. Are they wanting to invest in real estate for retirement or to potentially retire and get passive income? Are they downsizing? There's always an underlying reason. We need to be having more conversations beyond just, well, why do you want to buy this home? Asking them what's significant about becoming a first-time home buyer for them. What's important about this home purchase to them, and ask them in a few different ways, a few different times to really get to that core reason so that now you can provide advice. I use the metaphor of a medical professional. Medical professionals ask tons of questions about your life, about how you're feeling, about what you're doing before they offer that diagnosis, the advice of how to get healthy or how to treat those specific symptoms. We need to be doing the same type of thing. The challenge is, since we're not necessarily a salaried employee because it's commission and there might be a sale attached to it, we start selling. And at the end of the day, we need to focus on the relationship. But when it comes to understanding the market, the understanding the market isn't knowing all the nuances of how the market's changing and why. It's understanding what the underlying core fundamentals are going to be. Wealth is built with real estate. It always has been, it always will be. And that's probably the most approachable way for the average person to create retirement and net worth is that home. And so we've got to show them why now is the time, because if people are waiting for interest rates to go down, let's say, and if we looked into a crystal ball and said, oh yeah, interest rates are going to come down substantially in the next year. But you have so many people that we're talking about earlier that'll enter the home buying market at that same time. Home prices are going to increase, or someone may buy a home at a lower interest rate, but have a higher payment because they had to pay so much more for the house. So we really need to be educating people about why now is the right time, regardless of what's going on.
Yeah, I love that. I think it boils down to meeting people where they are and educating them for what they're looking for what their goals are.
That's right.
That's great. So let's talk about the mortgage industry. Something you talked about in your town hall, which was so interesting to me, was understanding what industry, or maybe industries, plural, that you're in. And you gave this story, this metaphor about McDonald's and how they might not solely be just in the restaurant business, like we all may think at first.
Sure.
Essentially alluding to how the way the services make us feel or impact our life is the true root of the business we're in. So can you talk a little bit about that and how housing professionals can apply this concept of redefining their business identity, not just I work in the mortgage industry or I work in housing?
Yeah, absolutely. And the metaphor that you're talking about is McDonald's. When I'm on a webinar or in person, I ask people, you know, what business do we feel like McDonald's is in? Everyone knows, you know, the Golden Arches. Mm-hmm. And the most common responses are obviously real estate. Yes, they're in the real estate business. That's some people think it's a trick question, but they're also in customer service. They're also in fast food. They're in all of these different businesses. But the core business that they're in is in the happiness business. The number one best-selling meal at McDonald's is a happy meal. Whenever a kid gets a Happy Meal, gets a toy inside, they're happy. Yep. Whenever they even created a clown that made kids happy until Stephen King wrote a book and kind of screwed that up for everybody, Ronald McDonald, that really isn't around anymore. But they understood that when people drove through and or got their food quickly, that made them happy when they didn't have to cook, whenever they got food quickly. At the core, they were making people happy. They sold convenience, fast food, obviously burgers and fries and nuggets and all those types of things. But they were in the happiness business selling those products, and they did make money with real estate. McDonald's owns more real estate than any other entity on planet Earth, except for the Catholic Church. So that's the core way that they make money. And they sell those convenience, the fast food, but they understood they're in the happiness business. And I tell people, how does that relate to mortgage and real estate? Well, we're not in the mortgage business. We're not in the real estate business. We're also in that love and happiness business. The love part of it is Tony Robbins talks about our two biggest fears as humans. Our second biggest fear is not being enough, that we're not good enough, that we're not smart enough, that we don't have enough money, and not attractive enough. And that plays into our biggest fear, which is not being enough, not being good enough, not being smart enough, or I'm sorry, not being loved, excuse me. So second biggest fear is not being enough. First biggest fear is not being loved, not being liked, not being loved, not being included, not being a part of something. So when we think about home ownership, we have to understand that when we say, hey, fill out our application, that root word of apply is saying, hey, fill out this form so I can see if you're good enough, enough to play in the biggest fear, to be a part of this tribe of homeownership, to be a homeowner. Mm-hmm. So I challenge
good enough people. To good enough to feel safety, to feel that sense of home. That's not something
you get to be included in that group of people that have financial security with homeownership or that are creating wealth through their home. And so we have to reframe it. When we reframe it that way, that goes back to what we were talking about a second ago, having conversations to find out what someone is trying to accomplish. And so I challenge people, instead of calling it an application, call it a client profile. If you've had that high trust conversation, Todd Duncan teaches a script around a high trust conversation, very similar to what we talk about. Todd's been a good friend and mentor for a long time. But we're asking them in that client consultation, really understanding what and how they're trying to do what they're trying to do. We can now create a strategy and provide that advice. And that in and of itself is the industry that we're in. You know, when people buy a home, I've had examples where a lady called to ask about a bond down payment assistance program. We pause the conversation. Hey, we'll get your questions answered. I'm excited that you're in this home buying journey. How important would it be for you to become a first-time home buyer? She's like, extremely important. I want to own property. I said, hey, it's part of the American dream. Yeah, I absolutely want to own property. How significant would it be for you to own property? And she was a middle-aged lady that said, I have a boyfriend who owns a home. I want to own a home because I think in a couple of years we'll get married. And if we buy a house together, we can keep each of our individual houses as rental properties. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, now we're talking about investment real estate, potential passive income. Would that be significant in your life to have passive income? And what she said was the real reason she was buying a home. And she said, my grandparents had a really tough life, but they made a go of it and they owned property. And they passed that down to my parents and aunts and uncles, but that generation squandered it. And so my cousins and I feel like it's up to us to change our family tree. So she was talking about generational wealth. I've had another conversation where a lady worked for a nonprofit and didn't have a retirement and said, I want to buy a home so I can have something for retirement. When we walked through that same type of conversation after, you know, a few minutes, she was in tears saying, really, I want to be able to buy a house instead of rent so I can let my daughter paint the walls any color she wants. There's these core reasons, and that's the business that we're in, is identifying that, providing them advice and a strategy to be able to go out and achieve those goals and dreams. And when you have that type of conversation and build that type of a relationship, now all of a sudden, even if they talk to another lender, they're not sure that the other lender's providing that same type of strategy because they didn't have that conversation. And most of the time, they don't even go talk to someone else because you've built that rapport. You've created that security in the relationship. So when we go to its fundamental core around what business are we in, we're in the business of helping people create happiness and to feel loved and included in a part of this tribe and community of homeowners. And if we start looking through that lens, it makes us want to ask questions. It makes us want to have conversations and allows us to do everything else we do much easier. And in that first example, we showed her how borrowing from her 401k was a better financial decision than doing the bond program, the down payment assistance, because of higher interest rate and recapture and all those types of things. And whenever we got into the process and she was frustrated by the amount of paperwork, I let her know, hey, listen, sometimes this can be a very invasive process. We may ask for a hair and blood sample before it's all said and done. But just remember, once we've done this, we can show your rest of your family how to do it. And that's going to change your family tree. And she immediately went back to, okay, here's the core reason that I'm doing it. And again, it also allowed, just from a more selfish standpoint, we weren't just talking about that home purchase. We were talking about the subsequent purchase if she gets married and other potential rental properties and other people in her house. And that is only achieved by, again, having those conversations, really looking deeper with people.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can accomplish just by being willing to go past the surface level. And then getting to know people. I mean, just what you said about calling it a client profile, right? That's what you call it, versus just an application. I mean, just little changes like that not only change the experience for the end consumer, but change your mindset and maybe kind of remind you why you're doing what you do, why you're doing what you do. So I feel like it can get monotonous. It can be hard in our industry. A lot, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have felt a lot of stress over the past few years, but even just doing this for your own like reminder of your why and hearing those stories, I think can be really powerful. It is.
And it also helps us to get out of that kind of order taker mentality where we're just answering the phone, gathering information, issuing a pre-approval letter. It does take us back to that core of why we do what we do. And I think that the other part when calling in a client profile is you're letting them know it's never going to be a no. It may be a not yet, but whether it's a yes or a not yet, we're going to give you the strategy to show you what you need to do to achieve this goal. And that's really at its core what I think spending that little bit of time with people and understanding them goes a long way. Even if they're a case that's probably not going to be able to purchase a home for quite a while, they're thankful that they now have a roadmap to get there. And a lot of times those people will refer you a lot of business as well.
Yeah, those are those people that are going to tell their friends, I felt safe, I felt good, and you know, I'm still working with him, you should check him out. Like, yeah, it's really worth it in not only, you know, for doing good things, but in dollars and cents as well.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. I want to switch gears just a tiny bit. My personal background is in marketing. So this is probably my favorite topic that you covered. It's how uncommon people are digitizing their reputation, kind of getting away from being obsessed with just a personal brand, which we can all argue is still important, but having a great reputation online, digitally, where there are so many eyes to see you. And there was something in particular you mentioned that really stuck with me that boiled down to what I call, what many people call imposter syndrome, and how that commonly comes with putting yourself out there digitally. You talked about how people can easily get down on themselves if their video only had 100 views or their post only had a handful of likes, but those are 100 people that saw you that easily without you having to go knock on doors, go to events, hand out a business card, things of that nature. Can you talk a little bit about that and how professionals can effectively digitize their reputation?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's another great question.
Yeah.
The first thing that you mentioned with imposter syndrome, first of all, we all have it at all levels. We just have to put that out of our minds. I remember, especially as I started speaking more at events, the initial reason that people wanted me to come speak was because I had a podcast. And I remember thinking, I'm putting a microphone in front of someone else that has something to say. Why do they think I have something to say? But I realized that I was learning from all of those people and I did have something to offer. I did have something to share. So regardless of the stage that you're at, no matter how experienced you are or not experienced in the business, in creating content or doing video, you only get better and more proficient through the reps. It's always about taking more action. Mm-hmm. When it comes specifically to the digitizing reputation, I got away from calling it a personal brand because people would push back and say, well, I don't want to be a celebrity, or they would hear brand instead of the person. A personal brand is about the person, not this brand. No one cares the name of the company on your business card. In the far majority of instances, probably into the 90th percentile, they care about you. So digitizing reputation, if your reputation is who you are, we just want to put it online for people to see. We want to talk about who you are more than just what you do. It goes back to when I was a kid, we only had a handful of channels. And if there were too many commercials, we changed the channel. Mm-hmm. Now think about that with social media profiles. If you're showing your business too much or trying to get people to use you for a mortgage or to purchase a home, they're going to stop paying attention because that's not why they're on social media. So talking more about who you are and your hobbies, things that you like, things that you don't like, sports teams, you travel, that creates some familiarity. And I say all the time that marketing at its core is about getting people's attention. And that's a hard stop. There's no extra. It's marketing's getting people's attention. Selling is different. When we create some rapport, when we create relationship, we're then able to offer a solution to a problem. We're able to sell them a product. But most people think they're marketing and they're just trying to sell. They've got call to action after call to action. And calls to action are great, but in the right context. So we want to start by how do we get exposure to more people? And the great way to do that is to put content on social. That's where a lot of our attention is. And what you're talking about if 100 people see a video, they're like, oh, that video didn't do very well. Well, let's change the metric. If you went to an event and 100 people saw something that you said or that you had interaction with, you'd come away from that event ecstatic. Hey, I got to interact with 100 people. Well, 100 people saw your video, so you had exposure to 100 people. And it's great if thousands see that video or hundreds of likes and comments. But I've been in the mortgage business for a while, and I've never seen a compensation plan that's paid based upon likes or comments or shares or even leads, right? Yeah. Marketing is about getting someone's attention so that you can then have a conversation like we've been talking about, develop a relationship and offer them a solution, because people pay for solutions to their problems. They pay with their time, they pay with referrals, and of course they pay with their money. So at the end of the day, when it comes to digitizing reputation, we've got to realize that people are looking at us online. So one of the main reasons to be doing it is social proof. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, if Sarah was a loan officer, I would say, hey, you need to use Sarah. Sarah's a rock star. She's going to create a strategy for you. If she says she can get it done, she will. But at the end of the day, you need to use Sarah. They just went and used Sarah. Well, today, when I have that same conversation, they go look Sarah up online. They either Google her or they look her up on social media. When they Google her, typically the top 3 or 4 or 5 results are social media platforms anyway. So that's solidifying that referral. Now, people are like, wait a minute, do they really do that? Well, when was the last time someone referred you a product or a service provider or a restaurant or a movie that you didn't first go look online before you made that decision? So we've got to realize that digitizing reputation, creating a personal brand, isn't about being a celebrity, isn't about being in the spotlight. It's allowing people to see more about you and understanding that. And to drive that home, I'll say one more thing. In Nashville, Tennessee, there's a group called the Brand Builders Group. And they've helped build brands for people like Ed Milet, Lewis Howes, the School of Greatness podcast, the author John Gordon. And they commissioned a group of PhDs at a university to do a study around marketing and branding and a really wide variety of topics. And one of the things that they found is that the higher the requirement of trust in a profession, the more important it was to have this personal brand, this digitization of reputation. Because whenever they were asking people on this small group of professions, about 2/3 of people wanted to see more of a personal brand from a doctor, from a lawyer, from a financial advisor, and from their employer. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that, those people have the same types of clients that you do, first of all. And second of all, when you go talk to a doctor or a lawyer or your boss or a financial advisor, there's a level of anxiety when you're talking to them because you're exposed. You're having to talk about some things that are more uncomfortable. Right. And we need to remember that when people are talking to us as loan officers, it's the same way. We see their credit, their income, their assets. We're talking about their financial situation. That's a high trust profession. And people automatically create trust when there's things in common, when they know more about you. The other way that I found to create trust, besides just finding things in common, is understanding that if you're adding value and you're not asking for anything in return, that creates trust as well. All the more reason why you're talking about yourself, if you're sharing information, if you're talking about ways people can get started investing in real estate or the best budgeting apps to save for a down payment. And it's not just, hey, call me for your home loan needs. There's an element of value because you're not asking for anything. Those call to actions need to be done at the right time. And we're just blasting them out on social media like advertising. And that has a much, much smaller degree of return.
Right, right. It turns people off, I think, sometimes. Something really interesting that you said, I've done a presentation on this with everyone being, I use the word obsessed again, kind of obsessed with a personal brand. There's a big difference between a personal brand and branding. Like branding, that's your colors, that's your whatever font, that's your logo, but your personal brand is you, it's who you are. And the more you talk about picking your kids up at soccer, make that soccer mom is gonna feel more comfortable whenever she calls you from the car trying to take her kids to soccer because you have questions about some document she submitted or whatever it is. It's just being, just be a human. I mean,
that's exactly right. Both of my daughters played basketball. My middle daughter plays basketball in college. Mm-hmm. I could go find a Facebook group that's dads of daughters who play basketball and just interact in that group as a human, as a dad, as someone that also played basketball and create relationships and get attention. That's marketing. Now, mm-hmm. if you do that in whatever your hobbies are, whatever things you do, they'll go to your profile and see that you're in the mortgage business. Right. Once you've developed some rapport and get to know them, there may be an opening to have that conversation, but we shoot straight for it. And that doesn't work. People don't want to be sold on something.
Right. What I've coached people is be you, show who you are while sprinkling in, you know, people know what you do. And when they're ready for you, they'll trust you and they'll come to you. So,
yeah, 100%. 100%.
For sure.
So there's a lot more to unpack there, but I think the premise is just understanding. If you're putting stuff out on social about you, whether it's video content, whether it's pictures, a, you know, long form written post, or if you decide to do a podcast, it doesn't have to be about mortgage all the time. And it shouldn't be about mortgage most of the time. It's more about you. Those stories that we put out on Instagram and Facebook and wherever that disappear in 24 hours, those need to be about your daily life. Just documenting who you are, as Gary Vee talks about. Document, don't create, just share things. And I had one of my clients was like, I don't know what to put. And I was like, what's your hobby? What do you like to do? She's like, I like to grow herbs on my deck, in my backyard. I was like, talk about that. So she did a video where she just showed the herbs she was growing and put on Instagram one of those little kind of surveys of what should I grow next? And she had like 30 or 40 people that responded about what she should grow next and was able to start conversations with people. We just have to remember, to close more loans, you need more leads. To get more leads, you need to start more conversations. So all of your marketing is about how do I potentially get introduced to, have someone become aware of me, or meet someone, get someone's attention so that I can turn, start having a conversation. That's the entire game when it comes to marketing and branding.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I could talk about it all day. So we'll switch gears because I'll get into a rabbit hole. One of the last things I want to chat with before we go here is, you talked about people who are uncommon, these uncommon people, how they embrace failure. And I want to specifically talk about it because we're at the start of a new year, 2025. Emotions and vibes are as high as ever to set goals, to meet them, to be successful. And that's all great. I hope all of us listening meet all of our goals this year and then some. But we're all human and that isn't always realistic. And getting familiar and being comfortable with the idea of failing can be tough, but you emphasize the importance of embracing failure. So what do you say to anyone listening right now on how they can and should kind of reframe failure as a building block to success, especially in an industry as challenging as the one that we're in?
Yeah, it is a challenging business and it's even more so challenging right now. So this is probably my favorite topic to talk about. It's one of the reasons that I close most of my talks with it is uncommon people embrace failure. We've got it twisted because of academia, school, universities, colleges. We were taught for years and years and years that success is on one side and failure is on the other. And we have to decide which way we want to go as if it was a destination. And neither one are a destination. They're not opposites. You, in fact, go through failure to get to success. And we inherently know that because we hear people talk about it on stage. We've read memoirs. We hear podcasts. And we understand that successful people failed over and over and over. And that's how they found success. And the reason is because there's never a situation where doing nothing is better than doing something, even if you fail. Because if you do nothing, you get nothing.
Right.
If you do something, if you take action, if you post or have a conversation, if you do anything, you're either going to get a result and get a win, or you're going to take a loss. You may fail. But that L in loss is L for learn. You now get to learn something. So it now becomes a win. And then you start compounding those and you start learning more and more. And that's how you're able to succeed. Now, a lot of people are like, you know, I'm not afraid of failing. I understand that. But I would say, are you okay with people seeing you fail? See, we think there's this big spotlight that's on us when the irony is no one has a spotlight on you because they're too busy thinking the spotlight is on them because we have that imposter syndrome and that insecurity. So the metaphor that I like to use for this, I obviously love quotes and metaphors, is baseball, professional baseball. My dad played college baseball. I played baseball and basketball growing up. And if you're a professional baseball player from the minor leagues through the major leagues or anywhere in between, if you have a 200 batting average, you're probably double A, triple A. if you have a 300 batting average, you're for sure in the major leagues, probably an all-star. And if you have a 400 batting average, you're Ted Williams. You're the greatest of all time.
Right.
Now, for those that don't speak baseball, a 300 batting average means out of 10 times that you go up to bat, three times you get a hit and get on base, or you hit a home run. The other seven times you strike out, you fly out, you ground out, you're going back to the dugout having failed. Yeah. And first of all, you don't do it privately. You do it in front of 50,000 people that call you every name other than the one your mom gave you. And you have to go do it again in 15 or 20 minutes in front of those same people. But they're in the dugout looking at a iPad, or they're studying the pitcher so that they can learn something to make the next trip up a success. And so, I'm sure our listeners are very good at math. At a 300 batting average, that means they're failing 70% of the time. So what that means for us is you can be an elite professional, some of the best at what you do in baseball. That means you're probably an all-star, failing 70% of the time. But so many of us won't go out and try something unless we know for sure we're going to succeed, because we're paralyzed by failure. That's why uncommon people embrace failure. And it's the same thing when it comes to not being productive and just staying busy and not truly taking action. I heard this example one time on a podcast. If you read every book there was on how to swim and you watched every video on how to swim, nothing is going to help you learn how to swim as much as jumping in the water and trying to learn how to swim, right? You don't understand the feel of the water and the weight of your body and how those things happen until you get your butt in the pool.
Right.
And so that's what we have to do with content and social media and sales and marketing and all of these things that we're so hesitant. Well, I need to do some more research. I need to learn some more. No, the best people, let's just use video, for example, the best people that do video that get a ton of engagement and potentially even create leads from that are people that opened their phone or picked up a camera and started recording. And the first ones are not going to be good. Just know that. If you start a podcast, your first episodes are not going to be good, but then you get to learn. My very first podcast recording ever, it was in May of 2018, was with Barry Habib. Mm. And he's since become a great friend and mentor. At the time, I knew him a little bit, but not a ton. I would ask him a question. He'd give this incredible answer. And I would say, fantastic. And I would ask him another question. He gives, I would say, fantastic. I didn't even know that I said fantastic as a transitional phrase. I just sounded ridiculous.
It was just your word. Yeah.
It was just what happened. And so that's what we have to do, is it's about the reps. The opposite of success is not failure. John Maxwell says the opposite of success is excuses. Mm. And any excuse will do. I had a mentor used to say that. I was like, what do you mean any excuse will do? He's like, doesn't matter what your excuse is. Any excuse will do. You're still making excuses.
Right.
So it's not about, do you look, I don't like how I look. I don't like how I sound. This is really important for those that are saying those things about not doing content. That's how you look. And that's how you sound. And we like you anyway. So just get over it. Pick up the phone, pick up a camera and start doing things, or start writing, or start taking pictures. But at the end of the day, you've got to go take action, because that's the only way that you're going to learn and get better. It's just like going to the gym. If you're training for a 5K or a marathon, you don't just jump on the treadmill and start running a marathon. You've got to do the reps. You've got to build those muscles. You've got to learn how to get there. And the only way to learn how to get there is to start doing it.
Yeah. And kind of going back to, those excuses, oh, I don't like how I look or sound. You're your own toughest critic. I mean, no one knows that you didn't mean to say it that way, or no one knows that you sounded weird. Like, that's all in your head. And yes. Like you said earlier, that spotlight that you think everyone has on you. No, we're all worrying about ourselves, kind of.
I'll give you one last quick example. One of my partners in M1 Academy is Nicole. She's in Denver. And she was originally a coaching client. As we were talking through it, she was very hesitant to do video because she didn't like the way she sounded. Yeah. Well, we got past that, and we got past the let's just talk about mortgage and real estate content all the time. And her husband have twins. And if people are familiar with the Stitch, essentially there's a video where someone will ask a question and then you finish the video. Well, there was a video that says, I wonder if anybody who has twins out there has ever gotten them mixed up. And she stitched onto the end of it that funny, you know, fun fact, a funny story. Her and her husband, when they were doing the wristbands, thought they got baby A and baby B confused in the hospital. So, and at the same time she's saying this story, one of her daughters comes in and is like, wait, I don't want to be the other one's name. I want to be me. And that video truly went viral on TikTok. She has millions and millions of views on that TikTok and, you know, tons of likes and comments, to the point to where she was interviewed by like half a dozen media outlets, like Newsweek and the Today Show and like all these different things. Now, it's not about going viral. If it does, great. But what happened is a lot of her realtor referral partners saw that video as well, were reminded of her, and she was able to re-engage conversations with them. Someone she went to high school with, she found out was actually lived a few streets down from her, and she hadn't seen her in years and years. And it created some more exposure that opened the door to have conversations and translate into business. And we forget that it's self-limiting beliefs. These things that we believe about ourselves that become true in our own mind, when we break through those, we don't know what we're capable of, what's happening. Our mission with our coaching company, with M1 Academy, is to help people execute and perform at the level they're capable of. To do that, we have to go out and take action. There's a quote that says, everything you want is on the other side of fear. Fear's not real. Fear stands for false events appearing real. It's not the reality. So that's why I love this failure conversation, is it breaks people out of the shell and says, I'm going to go take action. I might get some results, or I might learn something. Either way, that's a win. And that's how we build our businesses. And that's what uncommon people have done to get to the place where they're a lead and a top performer.
Yeah, you win or you learn. I love that. That's right. Well, you always bring so much good, so many good nuggets, so much good content. So to wrap it up, we'll ask you our signature question. How do you plan on lending it forward in 2025?
It's essentially the same thing we did in 2024. I've had every professional success I've ever had, and a lot of personal successes I've had, small wins, big wins, everywhere in between, I can trace most of them directly to a coach or mentor or someone in my life who took their experience and imparted it to me in wisdom. And that's what we're passionate about. There's a quote that says, you don't truly know something until you can teach someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the true spirit of lending it forward and even paying it forward, is, do you know something and can you share it with someone else? I never set out to be a coach. Actually, the opposite. I wasn't going to be a coach. But what I found was that it's one thing to be able to do these things for ourselves. It's another to show other people how to do them, and not just in the business. It's not just about your team. It's about helping homeowners, helping people invest in real estate, helping our partners build their business. That's what we're passionate about, is empowering others to do the same things that we've learned how to do. And I think that's what all of us need to do in this industry.
Wonderful. I agree. Cosign.
That's right. That. Absolutely. I appreciate that.
Well, this has been great, Phil. Thank you again for coming back onto the show. We hope you have a great start to the new year. And I'll speak for everyone. We look forward to reading your book when it comes out in Q1.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe. And if you would be so kind to leave us a review so others know you like the show, we would love you for it. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Tune in next week for another new episode, and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.